Bickley and Murata mornings from 6 to 10.
Bickley and Murata.
It's the greatest show on earth.
Bickley and Murata.
Good morning and welcome.
The world.
Dan Bickley.
Sports, man. Sports.
Vince Murata.
The power-packed morning zoo. Are you kidding me?
Bickley and Murata.
Spectacular.
This is the greatest show.
Bickley and Murata.
I love this show. This is the greatest show in the history of radio.
It's the greatest radio show ever.
Bickley and Murata.
I hate everything about this show. This is the worst show in the world. Happy Thursday, Valley sports fans. Good morning, everybody. Dan Bickley, Vince Murata, Jared Carlin, and Sarah Cazell on a chugging to the finish line Thursday.
But you had me at chugging.
Chugging to the finish line on a Thursday. I repeat myself.
Although, yeah, that's a skill I've never been able to improve on. Chugging.
Yeah.
Remember chugging with the fellas was a thing last year?
Oh, I do remember that.
I almost drowned doing it.
I do remember that. Before we get started, in between watching the Suns last night, the original Rocky was on. And so I started watching that. I don't even know why, but I just did. And this, when he begins to train for the fight, he scrambles out of bed at 4 a.m.
Mm-hmm.
And he looks at, and
slacker.
Well, that's what I'm saying. I'm like, this is our lives. We live Rocky every day of the week. I know, yeah. We don't do the egg, you know, morning.
Speak for yourself,
gulp.
Man.
Oh, do you? Yeah, sure you do.
I love it when it's
5 raw eggs.
Yeah.
Gulp, chugging gulp. Them.
When
yeah.
it spills out of the side
oh,
of my mouth
oh,
and onto my
gusty.
Onto my gray sweatshirt.
That is disgusting.
I thought you had botulism. Salmonella.
Yeah. Slacker.
Yeah.
Getting ready for the biggest opportunity of your life, Rocky Balboa, and
uh-huh.
you sleep in till
yeah.
4.
Till 4 a.m. Yeah.
I wonder why
uh-huh,
Apollo Creed uh-huh, won the first fight.
All right, so how's everybody doing? Good today? Yeah? Wonderful?
Fantastic.
Yeah, I know, right?
Love those 8 o'clock tip times.
Yeah. This is we're in a pocket of the sports schedule that's difficult because we're all sensing the end of football. Nobody wants that. The NBA is in a different kind of place right now. As we discussed, these are fun mm-hmm. basketball games, but nobody's playing with full strength anywhere. And so it's really hard to draw any meaningful conclusions out of the NBA. We've got to get post All-Star break until it really kicks in.
Hard to get into college basketball yet.
Yeah.
You're right. Pitchers and catchers are supposed to report in 2 weeks or so, but that's not really something to look forward to because we don't know what's going to happen.
Right. That's like 2 weeks away.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Theoretically,
right. Yeah.
Yeah.
This is a sort of a weird spot in the calendar.
Yeah,
especially when
right.
your team is not playing in
well,
the playoffs.
Well, there is that. There is that. So,
imagine what it would feel like today if we were only like a few
could
days
you imagine
away.
That? Oh. And we'd be hosting the game. Keep that in mind. The game would be at home this weekend, and we would be talking about keeping 49ers fans out of the building. That's what we'd be doing right now.
Yeah.
I'd be pleading with Cardinal fans to not
wow.
sell their tickets.
Yeah, instead of ripping the Rams for their attendance policy, we'd be pleading with our own fans to do similar things.
For the thoughts about BA yesterday, I just saw this a couple minutes ago. BA said that if Byron Leftwich takes a job elsewhere, he's calling plays next year. So BA is going full circle next year.
As soon as I find somebody better than
Spider
me, I'll let him do it, baby.
Baby, run that play.
I haven't found anybody better than me, baby.
That's yeah, he does believe that.
Yeah.
All right, start the show, Jarrett.
The Splash. The stories making waves in the sports world. The Splash.
Cannonball coming.
The Splash, brought to you by Presidential Pools, Arizona's number one pool builder. See why at presidentialpools.com.
Before we dive into the Splash, you think
uh-huh.
does Rocky hold up for you?
Yeah, it kind of did. I really... Yeah, it did. It held
first
up
one's
for me.
Pretty, yeah, it's pretty raw. It's still pretty good after all these years.
Yeah, and you could just see how authentic it. When that movie hit, I mean, it hit.
I was very, very young.
Yeah,
I remember my mom was not a moviegoer.
Yeah,
but my dad persuaded her to go to the movies.
Uh huh.
And she fell asleep. And my dad was not happy. A lot of times you'll hear people say you can't win a basketball game in the first quarter. Well, the Phoenix Suns kind of did that last night. The Suns stormed out to a 21-point lead after the first quarter, withstood a very bad second quarter, then hung on in the second half for a 105-97 win over the Utah Jazz. For their eighth straight win, second straight over the Jazz, Devin Booker spearheaded the charge in the first, scoring 21 points in the first 12 minutes. He outscored the Jazz all by himself. The Suns immediately followed that with arguably their worst quarter of the season. They were outscored 30-11 in the second and had a two-point lead at halftime. But yeah. Booker and Paul each had 17 in the second half to secure the win. Book finished with 43 points, 12 rebounds for the Suns. 38-9 now the record on the season. They stretch out their lead in the West to 3.5 games over Golden State with a home game against Minnesota looming tomorrow night at Footprint Center.
Another weird game and yet another victory for the Suns. They're very close to getting to that 40-9 record that I found to be preposterously and disproportionately important.
What's that analytic breakdown? What's the Suns' record in weird games?
Yeah, they're pretty good in the weird games.
They're good at winning the weird ones.
And if you like numbers, Devin Booker, post-mascot in Toronto, is averaging 32.6 points per game, post-mascot.
Thanks, wow. Toronto.
Yeah, thanks, Toronto.
And that was with the 11-point game against Indiana. Mm-hmm. Just imagine. Yeah, thanks, Raptor mascot. Elsewhere in the league last night, Ja Morant exploded for 41 points. Grizzlies beat San Antonio on the road, 118-110. Luka Doncic had a triple-double, 15-10 and 15. Paced Dallas, 20-point win over Portland. And former son Kelly Oubre got a haircut. It's not as poofy. But apparently it agrees with him. 10 three-pointers off the bench last night.
Uh-huh.
39 points. Charlotte beat Indiana 158-126. I was actually witnessing some of that game, and Indiana's defensive effort was just shameful.
Yeah. Okay.
Looks like the Denver Broncos will be the first of 9 NFL teams looking for head coaches to actually hire one. Green Bay Packers offensive coordinator Nathaniel Hackett getting the Denver job, according to reports from NFL Network. Hackett has been the Packers OC for 3 seasons, previous coordinator experience in Jacksonville and Buffalo. He is the son of former coach Paul Hackett and no relation to comedian Buddy Hackett.
Well, let's hope not.
That'd be a great story, though, wouldn't it?
Well, it kind of would be. I refuse to believe the Broncos hired this guy, if not for the hope that Aaron Rodgers is going to come with them. I don't know why this would be your hire, but that's just me.
Yeah, I mean, it certainly leads to speculation. You can look at, you know, he's experienced, yes. The Broncos had gone with a defensive coach last time. That didn't work out. Their offense has been their issue.
Mm-hmm.
But it's undeniable, the connection to Rodgers at this point. We are headed into championship weekend in the NFL. We got our first look at the injury reports for all 4 teams yesterday. The Rams, getting ready for the NFC Championship, did not have wide receiver Van Jefferson, offensive lineman Joe Noteboom, or defensive lineman Greg Gaines on the practice field. 49ers had a longer DNP list, including defensive lineman Nick Bosa, but that was just for rest. Elijah Mitchell, their running back, missed the session with a knee injury. Trent Williams sat out with an ankle ailment. And Jimmy Garoppolo, who is bulletproof, was a full participant despite thumb and shoulder injuries.
There is so much pressure on Sean McVay in this particular game, I think even more so than Matthew Stafford, because Sean McVay had to answer the question, is Kyle Shanahan in your head? Imagine that going into a game. But that's what the records are.
Yes, and if it was, you know, a lot of people were asking Cliff Kingsbury that about Sean McVay at one point.
Right, it's true.
Cincinnati Bengals had a short injury list on Wednesday. Both quarterback Joe Burrow and wide receiver T. Higgins were full participants for Kansas City. Only safety Tyrann Mathieu was out. Of course, he left the Chiefs' playoff win over the Bills with a concussion. Both of the home teams favored for Sunday. Chiefs a 7-point favorite. Rams a 3.5-point favorite, according to FanDuel Sportsbook. Speculation over players' futures continues around the NFL. Yesterday, Tampa Bay tight end Rob Gronkowski said he wants to take his time on making a decision on whether to return, and that if he was forced into a decision right now, he probably would retire again. Gronkowski had a good season for the Bucs, 55 catches, 802 yards, 6 touchdowns. 3-time Pro Bowl offensive guard Brandon Brooks of the Eagles announced his retirement at a press conference yesterday, and Australian Open tennis winding down. And we've got the final setup in the women's bracket. Top seed Ash Barty cruised into the championship with a 6-1, 6-3 win over unseeded American Madison Keys. First Australian Open final for the Australian Barty in her 9th appearance there.
Mm-hmm.
She will face 27th-seeded Danielle Collins from the United States, who completed a straight set win over Poland's Iga Świątek this morning. Collins' first Grand Slam final. Later tonight, tomorrow in Australia, Rafael Nadal will face Italy's Matteo Berrettini in one men's semifinal. And the other, it's a second seed Daniil Medvedev against four-seeded Stefanos Tsitsipas.
Yeah, that's a good set of semifinals on the men's side.
It is.
Australian Open is such a weird tournament. Every time I turn on a match, it's like players are playing in blinding sunlight. It's hard to watch.
150 degrees right now.
130 degrees on the court.
I know. Let's not move it.
Let's have it in the middle of the summer every year there.
Right, right.
They like the calendar separation from the other Grand Slams, I think. Oh. Probably a little bit too much. There you go. There is your splash for Thursday, January 27th. Coming up next, Suns. Yeah. It was a weird one in Utah, and they got by in another weird one. We'll get into some of the aspects of the Suns' latest win, number 38, next. It's Pickley and Marotta Mornings, 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station.
...of your area in voluntary cooperation with federal, state, and local authorities. This system to keep you informed in the event of an emergency.
Dan Pickley, Vince Marotta. Pickley and Marotta Mornings, 98.7 FM, Arizona's Sports Station.
You know, it's a good feeling, but it came with a learning curve. You know, I remember when we first got together, I mean, it always wasn't that easy. So, you know, we had a lot of trial and error. And now I think we've been in enough situations where we know what to expect and, you know, who we're playing against on both ends, you know, offensively and defense. You know, I think that's the most important part of it.
Devin Armani Booker, 43 points last night. 21 in the first quarter when he outscored the Utah Jazz all by himself. He finished with 26 in the first half, put up 43, 12 rebounds, made 9 of 11 free throws, and was very instrumental in the Suns, winning another strange one, 105-97, the final score over the Utah Jazz last night. Second straight game they played against the Jazz in this home-and-home with a day in between. The Jazz got a little healthier. They added Mike Conley, Bojan Bogdanovic, Joe Ingles, and Royce O'Neal back for key players who were out the other night in Phoenix. Still no Donovan Mitchell, still no Rudy Gobert. And it looked like it was going to be an absolute blowout.
Yeah.
But again, we got that reminder, Bic, that there's no such thing as a safe lead in the NBA, because it looked like the Suns were just going to like roll to a 50-point win. That second quarter was arguably the Suns' worst quarter of the season.
It was a lot of standing around. Yeah, it was really, really bad basketball. And again, I think we're going to have many conversations about this. And Devin Booker came out piping hot. And I agree with you. If he doesn't have that first quarter that he put up there last night, they probably do not win that game. Devin Booker quite literally set the tone for everything with that heat he brought the court. But as Dwayne Rankin pointed out, and as we're going to get into later, there's a lot of watching Devin Booker in the second quarter and beyond, because when you're really hot like Devin Booker was, you keep shooting, even when you cool off. And then the offense suddenly doesn't have flow. It's a fascinating thing in the NBA. We're going to get into that point later, but let's just say this. This was another hallmark performance from Devin Booker in the stretch of basketball outside of the Indiana game, as you pointed out, in which he's kind of willing himself to post some of these big numbers.
Yeah, it appears different. And like you said, we'll get into that later on about Devin Booker's production, how it comes into the flow of the game. Last night was also weird because things got tense in the third and, at points in the fourth quarter, too.
Mm-hmm.
And I always have, you know, one eye on social media, and a lot of people asking the questions like, where's Booker in the fourth quarter? Do they rely too heavily on Chris Paul in the fourth quarter? And Chris Paul was good. He wasn't his normal automatic self, missed a few free throws in crucial stretches. Look, we could talk about the Utah side of things, and they're missing their two best players. That's undoubted.
Yeah, you can't get past that.
You can't get past it, but again, that's the reality of today's NBA, especially in 2022. But also, and I brought this up earlier in the week, the Suns were missing four key rotation pieces last night.
Mm-hmm.
They're down to their third and fourth centers in this game, and I think when there's this disturbance in the rotations, it's a bit of a struggle for this team. And last night, again, JaVale McGee normally would be your starting center. He was unavailable. So Bismack Biyombo, he gets the start. You rely on Jalen Smith, who came in and did some good things down the stretch and had some had some not-so-great moments, too, but he hasn't played a lot lately. Yeah. The Suns are dealing with it as well. And Chris Paul talked about that. You know, it doesn't matter who's on the available roster. The one thing doesn't change with this team.
Yeah, I say this all the time, man. We got such a competitive group. You know what I mean? Like, everybody on our team, we so competitive. And coach, like, our coach is competitive, you know. And I think when you got that, we never step into a game like, man, we only got nine guys. You know what I'm saying? Like, we show up to play, we going to play. And I think that's what coach put up on the board before the game. And big letters that just said hoop. You know, and that's what we do. Regardless of any situation, we just go out and hoop.
Yeah, Monty Williams also talked about that after the game.
All I talked about before the game was hooping. Whether we have 9, 8, 9, 15, 17, two-way guys, whatever it is, like, just hoop. You know, we have a scheme, we have a system, but you can't forget to go out there and play basketball and hoop. And I thought we did a good job of that tonight. Obviously, you have to execute. You got to make, you know, stops on defense, but it always comes down to that. You got to go out there and have the confidence to hoop.
Yeah, only four guys available off the bench: Peyton, Wainwright, Smith, and Shamet.
It's fascinating to me how the deployment of that word in the lexicon of the Suns and Monty Williams, hooping.
Yeah.
It comes up every now and again. It is quite literally this team's touchstone, a reminder of just go play basketball, mm-hmm. have fun doing it, but do it well, do it the way we're supposed to do it. I think that's really good coaching. I was curious why that word was important to introduce to the team last night, and maybe it had a lot to do with the injuries on both sides. And the fact that the previous game against the Jazz was just so disjointed as well. It's just a weird time in the NBA, man. When you get a couple of weeks outside of the All-Star break, it's just weirdness.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think there's any doubt that there's that mentality. And I don't think it's a conscious mentality. But, hey, we're getting close to the All-Star break. Mm-hmm. And we know that things get more important after the All-Star break. Mm-hmm. So I don't know if it's individual or if it's collective, but a lot of teams just have that mentality. And for the Suns to go through that this week, not only with their own absences, but those are two of the most shorthanded teams I've ever seen in an NBA game, Indiana and Utah back-to-back.
Yeah.
And it's got to be weird to get up for those types of games.
Well, listen, Indiana was missing its entire starting lineup, and Utah the first time around was missing their top six players. It's impossible to kind of get in. And I also think that's what lends to a lot of these are the NBA doldrums, man. Mm-hmm. The Suns have got a couple of marquee games coming up in the very near future. They're hosting the Nets. That should be huge. But you have no idea who's even going to play in that game. And then you're playing the Bucks at home, which is going to be gigantic. And there's a road game in Chicago. So there's a few tests coming up the next couple of weeks that will get this team's focus.
Yeah.
But who knows who's even playing in these games?
That's true.
It is totally true.
And it's got to be commendable, though, that they just keep winning.
Well, because
it is the doldrums, and it is hard to get up, and they have injuries.
No, it's everything, Jarrett.
If you compare them to the other three teams that made the conference finals last year,
mm-hmm.
look at the Bucks, the Hawks, and the Clippers records right now.
You said something earlier before we went on air today that is going to be a gigantic talking point for us a couple of months from now, and that is with the separation the Suns are getting now, even when they're shorthanded, by continuing to stack victories. There's going to be this feeling that they're going to be solid favorites to win the NBA championship and overwhelming favorites to get out of the Western Conference. That might be the storyline. There's a lot of pressure that comes with that. That's much different than hoping to win a playoff series against LeBron and the Lakers in round one. Now, I think this team is perfectly suited for that pressure. I don't think it'll get to them one bit, but it's going to be there.
You know what else I noticed last night? And maybe you noticed it too? Look, Utah fans don't like the Suns. Utah fans don't like Devin Booker.
Mm-hmm.
There's a rivalry between the two fan bases right now. I heard a lot of Suns fans in Salt Lake City last night.
Or there were a lot of Devin Booker converts in Salt Lake City.
Maybe.
I would really doubt that Suns fans traveled to Salt Lake City for that game, but there were MVP chants for Devin Booker last night.
So you're saying this is like Gorbachev standing up and clapping during Rocky IV?
When Devin Booker after the game
earned their respect so much,
he did the post game interview and he put the headset on. And he's like, "If I could change, and you could change,
right?"
I was almost blown away, but early in the game when he was hitting those shots, you're like, Wow, there's a lot of Suns fans in there.
What I think it is, because I've seen this in other road arenas, I think there's a lot of basketball fans who have become Suns fans. They might be former Phoenicians who are living elsewhere now, but they are now putting on Suns gear and going to games.
I don't want to say I told you so and puff my chest out, but I told you this probably 3.5 years ago.
All right.
That I believed Devin Booker, and I compared it to what Steph Curry, the phenomenon of Steph Curry, and you witnessed it when the Warriors were at the height of their powers, and they would come to Phoenix, and fans would show up with their Steph Curry stuff 2 hours before the game just to watch him warm up, and they hung on every practice shot in his warm-ups, and I said, I think Devin Booker's going to be that guy. Now, it's not to the same level, but it's happening.
Yes, I remember distinctly when you brought that up, because you, in your role as PA announcer, you're at these games and you notice this phenomenon of Steph Curry, which was very real. He was so white hot as a new, fresh NBA superstar that people wanted just to see him shoot the basketball, warming up, just to be in his space.
And you know what else I noticed on that front this year when the Warriors came to town to play the Suns?
Uh-huh.
There wasn't a whole lot of reaction to Steph Curry's warming up. There was more reaction to the local fans getting into what Devin Booker was doing.
There's watching Devin Booker. I remember being in Mexico City when Earl Watson was the coach. And I remember after practice, there was a lot of media there and there was some international media there. And Devin Booker was putting on a clinic of shooting after practice, and he just would not stop. And he was just, you know, doing his shooting drills and just making 3-point shot after 3-point shot. There were some players at that point in time who were kind of like, come on, Book, let's get on the bus, come on, thinking that Devin Booker was doing that because of the event.
Mm-hmm.
There was a lot of that early on where people were trying to gauge, what is this kid really all about? And I think everybody's been pleasantly surprised.
Oh, absolutely. In every way.
Yeah.
Suns get another win. They're home tomorrow to take on Minnesota. We'll have a lot more Suns talk during today's show. But coming up next, the NFL coaching carousel. Starting to spin a little bit faster this morning. Will it have a domino effect? We'll get into that and more next. It's Bickley and Murata Mornings live from the Ok Chin Community Studios, 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station. So in response to this Nathaniel Hackett news that is circulating this morning, Bick, I went to our sister station, their website. We always have Mark Schlereth on from 104.3 The Fan in Denver.
Right.
So I went to their website, denverfan.com, and there it is. There's the headline. This is the most important offseason in the history of the Broncos.
Oh, it always is.
There it is.
Yeah, there it is.
And they took a big step today by announcing Nathaniel Hackett. I guess it's not a done deal yet, but it's been reported by several outlets that the Green Bay Packers offensive coordinator for the last 3 years will take over for Vic Fangio as the next head coach of the Denver Broncos.
Yeah.
And just like the last few head coaches in Denver, he will be charged with leading a team that doesn't have their long-term answer at quarterback in place right now.
Yeah, that's I think this is interesting for a couple of different reasons. Number one, when you take a look across the NFL, is there a preference between hiring an offensive-minded head coach versus a defensive-minded head coach? Because the Broncos just did the opposite.
Depends on the year, I guess, right?
Well, maybe, and maybe, right, but there's also an argument that if quarterbacks play an oversized role and continue to play an oversized role, that building a support system around them, sometimes having the offensive-minded head coach is better, because that's the guy, that's the chief strategist, and if he's always in a defensive frame of mind and not relating to the quarterback, maybe that's it. Because you can draw examples like Mike Zimmer in Minnesota, and there have been others as well. To me, though, Nathaniel Hackett isn't an idea of the Broncos going, we need an offensive guy. I've got to believe they are hoping Aaron Rodgers is coming to Denver. That's what I've got to believe, because for Aaron Rodgers to leave, I was thinking about this yesterday because I was the one who was fearful about Aaron Rodgers ending up in San Francisco. The more and more I thought about it, that's not going to happen. If the Packers choose to trade Aaron Rodgers because Aaron Rodgers wants to go play somewhere else, it's going to be to the AFC. He's not going to be traded to an NFC team because the Packers control that. Now, they're going to try to strike. If they get to that point, I'm sure it will be someplace that Aaron Rodgers signs off on, but it's not going to be to an NFC team. They're not going to say, okay, Aaron, where do you want to go? We'll make this work for you. Where do you want to go? because the whole game is going to be Aaron Rodgers threatening retirement versus coming back to Green Bay versus going and trying his hand somewhere else. And after the game over the weekend, it sure sounded like Aaron Rodgers was saying goodbye to the city of Green Bay. But again, you never know with Aaron Rodgers because it's always drama and it's always something.
Oh, yeah. Kimberly Martin covers the NFL for ESPN. She thinks, there might be something to this connection now. Rodgers, at least she believes he's done with Green Bay.
When I hear Aaron Rodgers talk about, this won't be a weird standoff. I'll make a decision. I won't drag this out. If he wanted to come back after the way he played and the way they lost, I would think he would sit down on Pat McAfee's show and be like, there's no way we could go out like that. We are too good. I am too good. We're going to run that back and we're going to do it and win a Super Bowl. Like, I would expect that energy as opposed to, well, we just got to see, Devontae doesn't want to be, franchise tag. So that's got to be taken care of. I don't really want to be part of a rebuild. There's a lot of guys' contracts up in the air. He's talking about all the things that don't, it felt like heading into the season, one foot was already out the door. The way that season ended, to me, it seems like the both feet are out, the door is slammed shut, in my opinion.
Yeah, and there's
that's
a lot of people.
Strong take, and there might be a lot of validity to that.
There might be, and there's different people who feel differently than that. But to your point that you made earlier about Green Bay, and they have influence on what happens with Aaron Rodgers. Now, they've been clear in all of it. When the season ended, we want him back, from the ownership to the front office to the head coach. Matt LaFleur, they want him back. Here's Tim Hasselbeck on ESPN saying, Green Bay still has a lot of power in this whole thing.
Aaron Rodgers is still under contract with the Green Bay Packers. And so while he has a ton of power and leverage in this situation because of the type of player that he is, it's not just solely up to him. And that's never been the case. That's why I've always maintained that he would end up back in Green Bay. Somebody please tell me what the trade value is for a guy that has dominated the league the way he has over the last 4 years. If Matthew Stafford was traded for what he was traded for, who knows what, and who knows if anyone has enough firepower to put a trade together to actually get Aaron Rodgers. People need to always remember that. He's under contract. Yes, high cap number, but it's not just Aaron's decision.
Very true, but you wonder.
I think that's an undercooked take right there, because that's ignoring the parameters of Aaron Rodgers' return this past season. Because there was a time when he was sitting on the fence, and then they got together and they agreed to play this past season, and who knows what the framework of that agreement is.
Sure, but don't you think part of that return, as late in the game as it was for Aaron Rodgers, was partially because of the calendar? I don't think he wanted to miss football.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think he wanted to go back to Green Bay, but everybody dragged their feet so much that there was really no other option. And it was a disappointment. Like, he's going to win the MVP again.
Yeah.
But they scored 10 points in a home playoff game and lost.
Yeah.
And Tim Hasselbeck talk about how he's dominated the league for 4 years. Yes, he has, until the calendar flips to January, and then it's a different story. I can't get over the fact that Aaron Rodgers has been to one Super Bowl in his career.
I know.
With the level of play. Now, okay, so let's assume for this next question, Aaron Rodgers does want out of Green Bay.
All right.
And I agree with you, the Packers probably wouldn't want to deal with him in the NFC.
No.
But if I'm Aaron Rodgers, do I really want to go to the AFC? Aaron Rodgers,
all the young guns
with the Packers, has not been able to get to a Super Bowl in a decade.
Yeah.
And the quarterback, it's not like the quarterback playing the NFC is poor. It's not. But when you look at the landscape of the future in the AFC, if this is a quarterback-driven league,
right?
Good luck as an aging quarterback getting past those guys who are playing at a different world level right now.
And they're young.
Yes.
Mahomes,
and they're only going to get better.
Mahomes, Herbert, Burrow, Josh Allen, they're all super young. Even Lamar Jackson.
Do you think someone with his ego would see that as a challenge? Like, I'm going to walk into this lion's den and I'm going to own all of you? Or do you think he might fear getting owned by these younger, less experienced quarterbacks who are taking over the league?
It's a fascinating question. I think that Denver is a football town. They're football crazy. Obviously. So it's a very good football town, but you're going in. Could you imagine what the AFC West would be like next year if Aaron Rodgers went to Denver?
Yeah.
Patrick Mahomes and Justin Herbert is in that division.
And the Raiders, who made the playoffs this year, by the way.
And the Raiders, right. Also, Derek Carr and the Raiders, who happened to make the playoffs this year. That's funny. Yeah, so to me, I think this is going to just come down to A, did the Packers and Aaron Rodgers kind of come to an agreement entering this past season that, okay, I'll play nice this year, but at the end of the year, if I still want to go somewhere else, you will trade me. Okay, done. Mm-hmm. All right, let's all play nice, and right. Boom, let's do it.
Luke Lipinski, of all people, actually made an interesting point yesterday. Because
it must have been brilliant if you're giving it credit.
Well, because Wolf was hung up on the fact that Aaron Rodgers said, like, oh, his relationship with Goody Kuntz, is that his name?
Yes.
Is much better now. And Luke said, like, well, that might be true, but it might be one of those situations where it's a terrible marriage and they finally get divorced. And now that they're divorced, they have an amicable relationship.
Mm-hmm. Oh.
So once they establish that they're going to get divorced, now they can like sort of like
work past this.
They work with each other, they get along with each other, and like you said, they've sort of come to an agreement before the season is like,
we're not going to be together. There's no reason to fight anymore. Let's do this for the kids.
For the kids.
Exactly.
Yeah, no, and then finally there's a lot of people like, "Well, what would Green Bay ever do that for? Green Bay's winning. Green Bay." The fact of the matter is if Aaron Rodgers, if the threat of retirement, if he really is willing to go down that path, then the Packers would be dumb not to get some assets for him right now. And maybe Green Bay's at the point where, look, even if we keep him around, it's maybe two more years. He doesn't win for us anyway. And there was a
lot of headaches.
There was a fascinating, we were giving Aaron Rodgers a ton of credit this season for never making any mistakes on football fields anymore, never forcing passes, never throwing interceptions, always making the right play. Aaron Rodgers was getting ripped after the weekend's playoff loss for playing too careful, for not attempting to make big plays, which I thought was fascinating.
Mm-hmm.
Some people are claiming he was protecting his quarterback efficiency rating. Would you really do that if you were Aaron Rodgers?
Do you really want to climb into the brain of Aaron Rodgers?
No, I don't. I really don't.
Dangerous place.
Yeah, it is.
It is. You can text your thoughts to the FanDuel text line at 620-620 right now. Coming up next, yes, we're getting ready to sit down on Sunday and watch two Cardinals division foes battle it out for a chance to go to the Super Bowl. That's so much fun being an Arizona sports fan. We'll get into the Rams 49ers matchup next. Bickley and Murata Mornings, 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station.
Bickley and Murata. Hash marks.
It's a big challenge. You know, they're a team that's playing really good football at the moment. Physical, tough, finding ways to win. Defense is playing outstanding. Their offense is playing timely. And obviously, their special teams made some big plays last week. So, you know, it's going to be a big challenge for us. You know, hopefully it's you know, one of those games where we come out and it's heavy, you know, blue and yellow, and we, you know, have a nice loud crowd that makes it tough on them. So we'll see. I'm excited about the opportunity.
That is Matthew Stafford, the quarterback of the Los Angeles Rams, previewing the matchup this weekend for a trip to the Super Bowl. It would be a short trip for the Rams if they win it.
Yeah, it would be.
They wouldn't have to go anywhere.
That'd be the second consecutive NFL franchise to play in their own Super Bowl.
Isn't that crazy?
Yeah, and that Arizona hosts the game next year.
For 54 years, it didn't happen. Nuts. It could happen 2 years in a row.
Uh-huh.
And to your point, 3 years in a row with the Super Bowl in our backyard.
That would be good. You can sign us up for that.
Yeah, we'll get to that. Matthew Stafford, so far, and I don't have any problem qualifying it that way, Bick. So far, has quieted the noise about him. He's helped his team. Again, I think his introduction to the playoffs as the Rams quarterback was made as cushy as it could have been by the Cardinals' effort and game plan in the wild card game. Matthew Stafford elevated his game against the Bucs. Mm-hmm. And when it came down to it and the Bucs got back into that game, he made the throw of his life in a big situation to Cooper Kupp to set up the game-winning field goal. He's quieted the noise. He's not all the way there yet. If the Rams fail to beat the 49ers on Sunday, there will be some criticism of Matthew Stafford, but he will have quieted a lot of it.
I think so. I think because we talk about the Carson Palmer comparison. When Carson Palmer got his first playoff victory in Arizona, even that wasn't that impressive. And I get what you're saying about the Cardinals not providing much resistance, and I'm not going to argue that point whatsoever. But Matthew Stafford has made probably 10 to 15 gigantic throws in two playoff victories so far. I've watched every second of those games. And so he's been really good, but I do think there's an element of truth to what you're saying. If he goes and has a three-interception game against the 49er defense, and the 49er defense is the story of Sunday's NFC Championship game, then that's going to reflect on Matthew Stafford as well. I think that he will have quieted a lot of this stuff going forward because he's won a playoff game, and now he's won two, and he's played very well in doing so. But I think if you're going to permanently shut them up, you got to win this game. You've got to get to the Super Bowl. You don't have to beat Kansas City in the Super Bowl. You probably have to beat Cincinnati if they get there. But the point is this. Matthew Stafford wins one more game, takes the Rams to the Super Bowl. I think he closes the book on it entirely.
I agree.
You lose to the 49ers. It's still going to be something because of the 49ers. But I think there's more on Sean McVay in this game than there is Matthew Stafford.
You mentioned it earlier in the show. Sean McVay, when you look at the recent history between these two teams, the Rams have beaten them six straight times, three straight series sweeps the 49ers have over the Rams. Sean McVay was asked a very pointed question by an LA media member.
Knowing Kyle Shanahan so well and with the success that the 49ers have been able to have against you, is Kyle in your head at all, you know, in terms of trying to get past these guys?
No. What I do have is respect for these guys. They've done a great job. You know, you look at it, you got to play well in that 3.5 hour window that we're allotted. You look at the last time that we played them, didn't finish the game, but this is a really good football team. We have a lot of respect for them, but you know, we're competing and preparing to the best of our ability to go out and see if we can advance. But this is a really good team. Kyle's an excellent coach. They got great players, great coaches, good schemes. And so it's why they're in the NFC Championship.
Yeah, it's such a weird dynamic when you talk about three of the four coaches in the NFC West and the dominance that they have over one another. McVay owns Kingsbury. Mm-hmm. Kingsbury has had great success against Shanahan. Shanahan kind of owns McVay.
Mm-hmm.
It's just
kind of weird, isn't it?
It's this weird circle right now.
Yeah, and I think that this is the pressure's on Sean McVay because Sean McVay has got the better quarterback and he's got the home game. And he's probably got the better roster as well. What the 49ers have, there's something intangible about this 49er team, and I was watching them play Saturday night in Green Bay, and the relentless way they come after the quarterback, even a game when their offense wasn't close to scoring, their defense was still, they've got a vibe to them that's really hardcore, and I don't know exactly where that comes from. But it's really, it was there when they smoked the Cardinals with a third string quarterback 2 years ago. You could see it. And that team was going nowhere.
Yeah.
So I've come around. There was a time this year when I began to wonder, okay, is Kyle Shanahan really a myth? Is this guy really overrated? You watch how this season's played out and you realize, no, this guy's got a lot of stuff going for him that a lot of coaches don't.
He does. But again, going to your point, especially that vibe on defense, go back to that that Green Bay game, excuse me. And we talked about it yesterday briefly in terms of, you know, what it means for the Cardinals, but being able to generate a pass rush without bringing extra blitzers.
Yeah.
And they did that, too, with great success against the Packers. Armstead had two sacks. Nick Bosa is always in the backfield. So, you know, he's going to get there, too. That's part of that vibe, is they don't want to bring those extra rushers.
It's interesting to me because in that game against Green Bay, near the end of that game, the 49ers had the ball, and Kyle Shanahan, he called a pass. It was third down and nine, whatever it was, and he had called a pass. And I read this in Peter King's column. It's not like I know this. And so he called the pass. They come up to the line of scrimmage, and Sean McVay's doing the math in his head. He's like, okay, 45 seconds. If this is an incomplete, that's a lot of time to give Aaron Rodgers. And something in his brain triggered, and he ran up and he called timeout. And they gathered, and he changed his mind. He said, we're running the football. Well, Debo is running the football, and if we don't get the first down, we're going to live with overtime. But I'm not giving that guy over there a chance to beat me in the last seconds of the game.
Yeah.
Debo Samuel picked up the first down on that run. The Packers did not see it coming.
Third and seven.
And then they eventually kicked the field goal to win it. My point is this. Kyle Shanahan, in these key moments from what I've been able to witness, is really really good. He does not let the moment overtake him, and this is something Cliff Kingsbury struggles with. And Kyle Shanahan's really good at it, but that play also signals that bottom line, big stage fear he still has with Jimmy Garoppolo. And when we get into this game this weekend, and if they get to the Super Bowl, he'll remember that Jimmy Garoppolo could not complete that pass that could have won that game. And we know that ever since there have been games when he's reeled him in, when he hasn't trusted him to make that throw. So where Jimmy Garoppolo goes from this point forward is going to be fascinating, because he's come pretty far already for a guy they're trying to kick out of San Francisco. They've got him back to the NFC Championship game. But as these stages get bigger, your quarterback has to continue to make those big plays. And I'm not sure Kyle Shanahan trusts him, and I'm not sure how Jimmy Garoppolo will react to those moments. So it's going to be fascinating, man. And then the Sean McVay pressure. I mean, when you get Sean McVay as the young hot coach in the NFL, when he gets asked, is Kyle Shanahan in your head? Oh, can you imagine that?
You have to ask it.
When you do. Look at
the,
yeah.
In the last two games at SoFi, the last 2 years in the regular season have been 3-point wins for the 49ers. So close games, and I think it'll be a close game on Sunday as well. Can't wait to watch that one, in a way. Coming up next, we'll relive the Suns win in Salt Lake City last night over the Jazz through some highlights. Suns in 4 is next. It's Bickley and Murata. Mornings, 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station.